Hello there, this is Luke Clancy here, and this is Culture File, with our latest journeys into arts and culture from Ireland and around the world. This time, the road takes us through a classical music and hip-hop mashup from Belfast composer Anselm MacDonald, on to the textile stories of Gee's Bend, Alabama, seen and heard for the first time in Ireland at a new show at the Irish Museum of Modern Art, and then finally we make a few circuits around new chamber music from Black and Latine composers, curated for next month's New Music Dublin Festival by clarinetist Birgeneal Rash. But we begin with composer Anselm MacDonald and his rap and classical project, which brings together members of Crash Ensemble with the London Symphony Orchestra to perform MacDonald's music with a trio of Birmingham rappers. Politics of the Imagination is also a concept album and a forthcoming live show telling the satirical story of a fantastical political re-education via a possibly magic lift. Culture File spoke to MacDonald and the rap trio of Cosign, Barraclough and Joel the Custodian.
What the hell was that?
Don't worry, take a deep breath. Brain feels blurry, find your feet, gents, a beer and a curry and you'll both be reset.
What the hell was that?
I'm Joel the Custodian, rapper based in Birmingham.
You've stressed the clench, what do you see next?
You tell me, because you seem to be blessed with ESP, why the secrecy?
Yes. Was the technology?
Myself and Johnny met Anselm at a conference of creatives. We were leading a seminar about hip-hop.
Candlesticks in the dark, visions of bodies being burned. Candlesticks in the dark, visions of bodies being burned.
The kind of the lyricism within hip-hop and the dynamic and the complexity of it. And so we played an example of one of the greatest rappers at the moment called David Diggs, who's a part of a group called Clipping.
Candlesticks in the dark, visions of bodies being burned.
The hook gon' be what it is, the hands off, the retribution for what you took from the man.
And the fact that we loved it, and the fact that Anselm loved it, especially the complexity and the rhythmic playfulness, that ended up being sparking more conversations. Because we had met Anselm before, but that was the real connection point, is Clipping.
They coming on a swarm and they raining on your college ass disco. Get your collar turned up in your freshest attire.
Although Anselm came to our seminar, it's funny because it was reciprocal, because we also went to his seminar on the composer Messiaen. I'm a Barraclough rapper based in Birmingham. And it was in, actually, me and Anselm after that, I think it was, grabbed a beer. And Anselm then said, I've got this project. Kind of want to do a hybrid hip-hop and classical project.
Squeeze for the cracks, avoid the paths of the tracks, slip past the guards at the back, don't let them fasten the straps, leave while they sharpen the axe, there's always a chance of the maps being partially tampered with, smarter than that.
Hi, I'm Cosign, aka Darren, rapper, producer, based in Birmingham.
Beware of arson attacks, beware of traps, beware of dastardly axe, beware of partners.
So I was drafted in via Joel. Joel and Johnny are both known via the hip-hop scene in Birmingham. Joel just gave me a very interesting phone call one Saturday afternoon, just basically saying, got some work that you might find interesting, and I had you in mind for it. I think the phrase that was used was rhythmically challenging. I'm always interested in how we can sort of twist what we do and have it sit in different arenas.
They're burying the teeth and they're arching their backs, but it's the one who laughs last who pulls rank. Fact. They're burying the teeth and they're arching their backs.
One of the things I find immediately kind of with hip-hop is that the kind of variety of sounds used and the breadth of samples and the kind of textures that are used is something that really challenged me. And I ended up using a lot of samples in the work to try kind of reach towards that kind of expression. I can't remember whether it was a Joel or a Cause said to me at one point, Anselm, do you know you like never repeat anything, and hip hop's all about like looping material, so you need to start kind of repeating some more of it. So it's been interesting actually since the project that's been something that I've really challenged myself on. Why do I not like to repeat things? Part of it's maybe a fear, is this good enough to listen to two or three times?
Don't say anything back away now. I think we've been clogged. Don't say anything. I see another three cops. Every part back to the list.
In the setting with Politics in Imagination, it's completely out of the typical rap field. And so we don't have the sort of comfort of a 15-minute loop of music just to write some ideas to, where we can almost be selfish with the concept and take over the music, and then the music kind of pulls itself back in that tug of war when we get back into the studio. With this, we're getting very complex pieces of music that don't repeat, that have their own fluctuations, ebbs and flows, pulls and pushes, and a narrative and an idea that's typically not going to be over in 2 minutes or 3 minutes.
We as rappers came up with stuff and bounced back and forth with Anselm, and Anselm challenged us every step of the way, but it was a great, the process was great in that he helped us, and he was willing to give us a little. I think we gave him a little, but we didn't meet in the middle. That would be very unfair. It was very far on the side. If it was a spectrum between avant-garde classical music and hip-hop, we're very far over towards the classical side. We didn't, it's not like some cello with a 4-4 beat by any stretch of the imagination.
Infinite heavens and infinite hells. Think of the merits, the jar full of pennies, this chalkboard and nails. Been through it all and saw for myself. Waged in the war of imagination and worn the epaulettes as well. Many a patron in these 15 square feet I've sprung vacant and let them see the things of their dreams. Folly on a jolly as they romp through those scenes but come back on melancholy.
I guess the challenge of this project is you have multiple characters. We were all writing the story as well, so it wasn't like one of us came up with the story and then dished it out to everybody else. Here are your lines, or here's a verse on this. And that part of it for me was particularly rewarding because we genuinely didn't know where the story was going when we came up with it.
And they're forced to sep a coup what once was resolute. Back to the drawing board, back to the pen and pad, the travellers return, and every time they're always yelling out,
what the hell was that?
After we'd finished writing it, actually I thought, oh, I can see with the narrative arc now, which we couldn't see at the beginning, which I think is how a good story should be written anyway. So, and that was an extra challenge, but also an extra reward that I guess a Slim Shady thing wouldn't have. I wonder, I think what we did here, which I'm really proud of, is we came up with the story all together.
Six villages, we just about made it through.
What you gonna do when this whole crew is chasing you?
Danny, here's your man.
Oh, man, you keep it.
Like, as hip-hop artists who, you know, that work with producers, we typically kind of dip our toes in different genres to put them into a hip-hop setting, hence sampling. If we need a sound, we'll find it off a record or something, or we'll chop and twist it and make it our own. It's not like we'd necessarily find some classically trained musicians and, you know, pay a session fee to get some complex music written to rhyme to it. There's a very DIY cottage sort of element of hip-hop music, because its origins were in people who didn't have access to music, so therefore they used the turntables, they used existing music, they scratched, chopped it, added drums from other records, things of that nature. But it does get you thinking, and I think one thing that was pertinent with all three of us rappers was that we definitely wanted to be able to show some artistry in what we did when we're coming to very experienced and advanced musicians.
You promise.
No comment.
So honest.
Close the door.
I'm honest.
Dude, you promised.
No comment. No comment.
To play the role, which is just a false prophet.
You're another drone with a god complex.
We're going down.
Not with me in the cockpit.
No, the lift is going down. And now you're both honest.
It's a project that I've really enjoyed and I think has kind of found a lot of directions that I didn't think I was going to go in my music, but actually make sense to me, actually, like looking back. I've been gradually integrating rock music, electronica music back into my work. This just seemed to be a really deep dive into that. So I am very keen to kind of continue it. It's something I've gotten in kind of my sights, you know, if something comes up over the next few. Yeah, Johnny's like, I know what he's like. He's already kind of planning 5 years ahead what he's going to do there.
Anselm MacDonald there with Cosign, Barraclough and Joel the Custodian. The album Politics of the Imagination is out now with the live performance version at the Oh Yeah Centre in Belfast on March 29th. Now on to Gee's Bend, Alabama, where for nearly 200 years a community of African-American women has been making quilts from pre-loved clothing and other recycled material, an act that the curator of a new show at IMA sees as every bit as political as it is practical. Culturefile's Niamh Daly walked the exhibition with Raina Lampkins-Fielder to hear the story of the Gee's Bend quilters.
the women in G's Bend, you know, the stories around their quilts is they make what they want to make. And in doing that, they make do with what they have. So this salvaged, recycled material, you're making do with what you've been given. And from that, you transform it into something astonishing. My name is Rena Lampkins-Filder. I am the chief curator for Souls Grown Deep. My work really involves supporting, advocating for, disseminating the work and the ideas of Black American artists from the Southeast of the United States. And so part of that, what I do is I put on exhibitions, I work with museums, I work with the public, academics, those who are interested in the work, but also those who are being introduced to the work of these artists that are represented in our collection. I was an associate director at the Whitney Museum many moons ago, and you know, I was used to the Whitney Biennial and kind of groundbreaking contemporary art, and I was like, well, what are these quilts are coming on the wall? That's interesting. And then as soon as I saw them, I got it, you know. And then I was like, I felt that something had been kept from me. So we mounted the Quilts of G's Bend exhibition in 2002, and that was my first introduction. And I wasn't the only one who was dazzled by that show. I mean, it was lauded as a really important show. I mean, Michael Kimmelman in the New York Times, you know, said it was like one of the 10 best exhibitions. You know, these are great masterworks of American art. So it really was that moment that for not just me, but for a lot of people, our eyes were opened and our mind was expanded about artistic practices. And so I now am working very directly with them with Souls Grown Deep. So coming back to their work, having acknowledged how much it informed the way that I looked at art, it was part of my evolution as a person and how I look at things, you know? And so now I get to really work with this material, get to know the people, get to know the place. And getting to know the place changes how I look at the work. It has become even that much more profound. So it's been, I feel like I was first introduced in 2002, but in all of these years, because of this work, I'm able to almost get reintroduced to it again as I learn more and delve deeper. And so it's been an evolution. So G's Bend, Alabama, is also known as Boykin. And it's positioned on the banks of the Alabama River in the middle of this U-shaped curve of this river. And since the early 1800s, this very geographically isolated Black community of around 700 people have been creating these quilt masterpieces since then. We believe that the tradition really started around mid-19th century and has continued consistently since then. Some of the earliest examples of quilts that we have in our collection come from the 1920s. Often when people think of quilts or quilt making, they don't necessarily think of an individual. They think of a pattern. They think of something very specific that can be replicated. People look at quilts and assume that all of the information that needs to be conveyed is with just the understanding that this is a monkey wrench pattern. Like, that's the extent of knowledge, and someone who does it really well versus someone who maybe does it less well. But that, I think, has trained in some ways the general audience to look very much at the surface almost very quickly in a very decorative way, and to not look a little bit further. So you have that, and then you have G's Bend quilts, which come in a very different direction, where it's about, it starts from the story of the place. It starts from houses that were too cold. It comes from not having enough fabric that was available. So if someone had grown out of their trousers, they will give it to you and you will tear it and rip it and put it into shapes in order to have enough material to put together a quilt. So it comes from entirely their lived circumstances. Everything is, in some ways, a little bit of a biography of America, of the American South. And then there are actually the stories that the quilt maker herself embeds into it. Louisiana Bendolph, she created a print that refers to the steps of a grandchild who passed away, so can no longer take these steps. And I think that's one of the reasons why people are drawn to these works and feel that there's something a little bit below the surface, because there is something below the surface. But it's also the fact that there is this kind of energy that is shot through so many of the pieces. One feels, even if you don't know what the story is, you kind of feel that there is a story behind that.
Yeah, there's one that I was looking at that has all of, it's blue and white small squares, like in a check pattern. It's like there's four quadrants, but then there's one that's like empty, and it's like one of those, expect it to, you know, like if I was making a quilt, I would want it to be, you know, oh God, I got that square a little bit not square shape, I better go fix it, you know? But there's this like confidence to not follow this idea of like perfection.
Total confidence, because why? You know, I mean, you know, one remembers only that pattern, you don't actually remember the quilt. One is coming about it with a very different sensibility. It is a sensibility that is not about meeting someone's expectations, you know, whatever that might be. It's not even about kind of trying to shock people like this is unexpected for you. It's more about this is what I want to see. You know, this is making sense to me, and this is the rhythm that I want this work to have. But it's precision shot through the mind of an artist as opposed to precision shot through the mind of someone who is trying to make something that can be replicated. You know, I do sometimes think of this as being very much a metaphor for the Black experience in America, where we were being thrown away, but persevered and survived and thrived. It's taking the detritus that might have been given to us, the scraps of food, and finding enough nourishment to persevere, you know? And it's sort of, it's again almost that acknowledgement. It's like, you know, no, let's not throw it away. Let's turn this into something majestic. You know, let's keep going. We weren't thrown away. Let's just be majestic.
Curator Raina Lampkins-Fielder there at Immer talking to Niamh Daly about Kith and Kin, the Quilts of Gease Bend, which is at Kilmainham until October. And finally, this time, Burgeonal Rash, the American-Irish clarinetist who's curated a programme of new music by Black and Latine composers for this year's New Music Dublin Festival. Burgeonal presents Bombas, gives 10 contemporary chamber works, their Irish premieres, as well as a world premiere to a concerto by Joseph Holman. It turns out to be an unexpectedly defiant event, not just showing off music never heard in Ireland before, but also the work of artists whose livelihood and indeed lives are increasingly imperiled under America's new order, where relatively recent gains for historically underrepresented music are daily reversed. In the context of all this, Burgeonal Rash spoke to Culturefile about the composers he's worked with on Bombast and what they are now enduring and resisting.
The program itself is one nurtured from love. It's a love of artists and an artistic practice that isn't often seen or centered here in Ireland, but is making a huge, you know, sort of presentation in the U.S. and abroad. The concert itself features works by Black and Latine composers. Many of the Black composers are part of a collective known as Blacknificent Seven. And it just features a cornucopia of works, solos, some improv, and chamber works, all sort of nestled together to create this sort of overarching feeling of warmth and, of course, empowerment and a sense of ownership of one's identity in the face of experiences and a world that might otherwise subjugate or repress. So it's an exciting program, but also one full of sort of grit and depth.
That's almost, you know, when you describe it that way, that's almost the conversation we might have had, you know, 6 or 8 months ago, you know, that this music was beginning to find platforms all over the place. But literally, it seems to be, for some reason, a central plank of the new administration in America that those platforms disappear or those platforms close to this music.
Yeah. I think there's a fear of centering the other, a fear of sort of acknowledging that those that we have often assumed to be less than or not good enough or incapable of or getting an opportunity because of an EDI strategy or DEI strategy as it is in the U.S., there's a fear of being supplanted and replaced by the other. And that fear is, I believe, fueling a lot of sort of harmful and hurtful practices and experiences via the current administration in the U.S. So it is shocking, and many of my friends and colleagues are directly impacted by this.
And very specifically in the program for Bombast, you have music from Carlos Simon, who is theoretically the composer in residence at the Kennedy Center.
Yes, he is.
Tell us, what is the update on that? For people who don't know, maybe even tell us about the change of background people.
All right. Well, at the Kennedy Center recently, the now president of the United States has appointed himself the chair of the board and has ousted much of the board, if they have not already resigned, and as such has done away with any sort of programming that hints at DEI, from the Gay Pride Choir concert that was going to happen to works by, of course, composers of color. And we've seen a huge defection of artists in residence or performers who are scheduled to perform at the Kennedy Center. We're seeing a lot of this backlash because of the U.S.'s president's decision and unilateral power he's given himself. And Carlos Simon, being the composer in residence there, being a person of color, a composer of color, we're not really sure he'll remain in that position, whether he'll leave. But I'm sure there is a lot of sort of frustration and angst and anxiety around the current situation. I have friends who are scheduled to do concerts at the Kennedy Center who are in this sort of limbo, not sure if their program's going to be canceled or if they need to take a stand themselves, as so many others have done. So it is a very fraught time in the arts.
Carlos Simon, for instance, I think it's on his website at the moment that he said he wasn't leaving. He's somebody who was going to stay and fight, whereas a lot of people decided, I'm going to get out of there immediately.
Yeah, I mean, and of course, that's a personal choice, and one that, you know, only Carlos can make for himself.
But the great thing is that even if the Kennedy Center doesn't get to hear his music, well, you know, which it may if he digs in there, we are going to get to hear his music in Dublin. So tell us a bit about the piece that we'll hear as part of Bombast.
So Carlos Simon Loop is a string trio, and it's driving, it's active, and all three voices sort of trade the responsibility of leading and carrying the impetus, sort of carrying the momentum of the work, in which case you need all three instrumentalists working in community to yield this result. There's a few moments where they're sort of contending with each other. By and large, Loop is sort of this modo perpetual sense where each facet needs to be in lockstep with each other to really create that momentum and keep it going. And I think it has a beautiful statement, or rather it makes a beautiful statement about the need for community, particularly in the times that we live in right now, presently, where, you know, building community is at the forefront of so many of our minds, and also what does community mean and what does that look like, and how do we extend community beyond the immediate people in our vicinity and make space for others in community. So I think that piece really is sort of central and integral to this idea of taking up space and ownership and doing so in community with others.
So the Joseph Holman piece is a clarinet concerto, so this is one that you're going to be centrally involved in.
Yeah. It is an Irish premiere. It's a world premiere, actually. It's just recently finished, and it features B-flat and E-flat clarinet and a chamber group of seven made up of violin, viola, cello, harp, bassoon, horn, and percussion. The idea, the impetus behind that particular work is sort of using the clarinet as sort of the standard idea of the status quo. We see B-flat clarinet in everything, orchestras, bands, it's everywhere. It's sort of the de facto clarinet that you think of. And E-flat always seems to be or has always been used by composers as this sort of nagging, out there, loud, abrasive voice, whether it's in, you know, Till Eulenspiegel, or if it's in Berlioz's Symphony Fantastique, the E-flat clarinet always plays a sort of really bright and sort of aggressive voice. And so in comparison to the B-flat, this E-flat part, or the E-flat, represents sort of this idea of the other, where the B-flat is the status quo, it's the normal, and E-flat's the other, and how do we make space again, making space, making community for the E-flat, and demonstrate that the E-flat has more to offer beyond just its strident and stereotypical aesthetic that we have seen historically. And so in that regard, it sort of, it plays up the idea of the duality and the necessity to see the good in what we have ostensibly have recognized as being difficult or othered in some way, the subaltern, all in concert with the rest of the ensemble.
I was just thinking of Terence Blanchard at the Met and so forth. I was just thinking, that's going to stop, you know, unless, like, there are billionaires actively donating to the Met. That like, little door that seemed to open really recently gets slammed shut again.
But that shows how easy and how precarious people like me, who look like me, our existence is in this field, in most fields, really. If by one person getting a new job, a new presidency, is able to prevent all of this from happening, it shows just how ephemeral our I guess, worth, value, our output can be, or can be seen as. And it's really sort of sad, because I don't think too many other communities have the risk of such immediate erasure, right? That their work can be so easily erased, forgotten, dismissed, and repealed, as it were. And it's shocking. And so I challenge all of those companies out there outside of the U.S. who have the ability to fund and to bring forward those artists who might get their doors slammed in their face because of our current administration, U.S., to do so, to step up and, you know, to sort of continue those careers and to continue that legacy and to continue the growth of that work. Because we are at the precipice of some really great, exciting stuff that has been for far too long ignored, forgotten, downplayed, and to be in a place where we could possibly lose it because of ego and hubris and fear, basically, is really just unfortunate.
I was talking there to Birgenal Rash about Birgenal Presents Bombast at New Music Dublin 2025. That's in the studio at the National Concert Hall, Dublin, on Thursday the 3rd of April, starting at 1:30 p.m. Details and tickets from newmusicdublin.ie. And that brings to a close this edition of Culture File. Never forget, you can find lots more Culture File content, including extended versions of our Comfort Zone programmes with Colm Tobin, on the Culture File page on the RTE Lyric FM site. Till next time, bye now.